Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We do say hello to John Feinstein, who normally joins us on Monday, nice enough to change the schedule up a bit this week with everything going on. John, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, Jonathan, but you made me awfully hungry with that read.
Barbecue sandwich, do you go with the pulled pork? Do you go with the brisket?
Probably the pulled pork.
There you go. Same here. A little coleslaw.
I don't think you can go wrong with that stuff, though, especially down there.
We are headed to London as a show on Friday. Do you have any recommendations for us?
Oh, gosh. You know, the usual tourist stuff. You should go to Buckingham Palace. You should try to go to Parliament. It's one of the more extraordinary buildings in the world. I mean, I'm not even saying to go sit in and watch Parliament if they're in session. I'm saying to go to the building itself. There are all sorts of museums there, depending on what your taste is in museums. But definitely go to the Tower of London. The Tower of London is really cool. Restaurants, a little harder to recommend, not the greatest food in the world in London, but they do have very good Chinese food there if you like Chinese.
Everybody says Tower of London. Chad,
it's amazing.
Already,
yeah.
Tower of London.
We went ahead and got a reservation for a tour right when we get there on Friday.
Good.
Based
good
on
job.
Everyone's recommendation. I'm curious. You spent a lot of time at Wimbledon. We're curious about getting someone on from Wimbledon while we're over there, maybe a historian or someone like that. What is the Wimbledon setup like in terms of London? For instance, I'm in central London. Is where
I'm Wimbledon is out. It's a suburb. Okay. Wimbledon is actually a suburb of London. The best way to get from central London to Wimbledon is to take the tube, as they call it there. This stop is maybe a quarter mile from the front gate of London. It's not the Wimbledon stop. It's the stop before. Because if you take this, if you go all the way into the town of London, it's Wimbledon. It's a longer walk back. But I learned that the hard way the first year I was there. I went out on Saturday before the tournament started, and I took a taxi, and I arrived sometime on Sunday. And somebody out there said to me, no, you never take a taxi in London because the traffic in London is worse than perhaps anywhere in this country. It's just horrible. And the way to get around London is to either walk or take the tube. Like I said, the subway system is just unbelievable there. But getting someone on, I'm not sure who you would want on. I'm not sure there's anybody from the club you'd want on, but what I would do is maybe try to find one of the tennis writers over there. And I'm not as familiar with the guys covering tennis these days as I was once upon a time. The best tennis writer over there was Rex Bellamy from the Times of London, who I know is retired, and I wouldn't be able to tell you the best way to find him. Or different approach, you could try to find Bill Babcock, who is the head of the Grand Slam Committee for the ITF, and is a very smart guy and a very good talker. And if you drop my name, it will either get him on or guarantee that he won't come on.
I may have to do that, John. I'm curious. We know what Major League Baseball wants in terms of market size and teams for the World Series. Which matchup do you prefer? If you could pick two teams right now that are left to play each other in the World Series, which matchup most intrigues you?
Well, I'd love to see the Brewers get to the World Series. I mean, the Dodgers have won the National League pennant 23 times. They won it last year. The Brewers' only pennant was when they were in the American League in 82. I think they're a great story. The way they've come together, the way they put together that streak at the end of the season to tie the Cubs and then win the playoff game at Wrigley Field, then sweep the Rockies, who I thought were a good team. I just think, and the way Craig Counsell has managed them, the way he's maneuvered his bullpen around, which a lot of managers are doing nowadays, but he's done it very successfully. I had nothing against the Dodgers, and I'm a big Clayton Kershaw fan, but I'd like to see the Brewers get in. The Red Sox and Astros, little bit of a toss-up for me. I like the Astros. I've always loved Fenway Park. I probably lean Astros because so few teams repeat nowadays, And also, if the Red Sox lose, my agent will shut up for the rest of the winter. If they go on and win, I'll never hear the end of it.
Nick Bosa is not going to attempt to get back to play for Ohio State this year, and he's just going to get ready for the draft. This is a growing trend. I was old.
Isn't he a student athlete, Paul?
Yeah, I was old school on this, but now I understand. Look, you're setting yourself up for work. It's the American way to a degree, and I've got less of a beef with it than I would have had a couple years ago. Now that I'm kind of getting used to the concept, I'm expecting you to be more of the crotchety old man on this one.
Well, I am a crotchety old man, as you know, but I will say this. I have always, my attitude towards players leaving college early has always been this. They are no different than someone who is majoring in biology, who wants to go to med school. They're no different than somebody who's majoring in history, or someone who wants, like me, wanted to go into journalism. They are preparing to find a way to make a living. And if they are athletes, they are preparing to make a living as athletes. And I don't get all bent out of shape when players leave early. Now, the exception to that for me is when a player leaves, you know, the trend, as you said, Paul, has been guys skipping second-tier bowl games because, you know, the bowl game doesn't mean that much and they want to start to get ready for the draft and they don't want to risk injury. To me, my issue with that, again, they're training to be professional football players, but they're walking out on their teammates. I mean, their teammates have put in a lot of work, 12 games, 13 games sometimes, even occasionally 14 games to get to that postseason game, and then they're saying, yeah, fellas, it's been fun. This is our last game together. I'm gone. I as a teammate would have an issue with that. I, as a teammate, would have trouble doing that to my teammates. I know we're, you know, everybody's about self-preservation and things like that. But you risk injury anytime you play football, anytime you play sports, football more so. So that's my issue. With Bosa, if healthy, Ohio State's trying to win a national championship. And frankly, I hope they don't, given what's gone on with Urban Meyer and Zach Smith and that program. In the eyes of his teammates, he's kind of walking out on them, if healthy, while they're trying to accomplish something that basically football players work 11 to 12 months a year to try to do.
John, I knew things were bad in Nebraska when Scott Frost took that job.
Wow.
I did not expect them to be 0-6 for the first time in school history. I know Frost said something like, sometimes when you're sick, you just got to puke it all up. All at one time before you can bounce back and get better. What do you think about that approach, and what do you think about Scott Frost? Clearly, he's fine in the fans' eyes, and it's halfway through 1 year right now, but I don't think anyone expected this at this point.
No, I don't think anybody expected this, and nobody expected them to lose to Troy at home. Troy's a solid program, but they also just lost to Liberty. And I think people understood that things had gone downhill under Mike Riley. They lost their last four games last year. They were humiliated in their finale. I think it was 45-19, something like that. So I think people knew it would be a work in progress. It's worth noting that Frost took over at UCF when they were coming off an 0-12 season, and went 6-7 in his first season, and of course undefeated last year. Scott Frost, good football coach. He didn't forget how to coach on the plane or on the drive from Orlando to Lincoln. And he's a grad in Nebraska. He knows what it takes to win there. They'll get their act together. It may take another year. It may take another 2 years, but they'll get their act together. Whether they'll ever return to those glory days under Bob Devaney and Tom Osborne when a bad year for them was 9-3, I don't know. I doubt. But I think they'll certainly become a contender in the Big Ten again in another year or two under Scott Frost. And look, there's history with this. I remember when Joe Gibbs first came to Washington, his first season, they started 0-5. And Gibbs turned out to be a pretty successful coach. So I think I've said this to you guys before. I never judge a coach or a manager on his first year, either good or bad. Sometimes you take over and there's enough left behind in the cupboard that you're going to be good and that doesn't mean you're going to ultimately be successful. Other times you take over and the cupboard is so bare that it takes a while to get the program back together. And I think that's the case with Scott Frost in Nebraska.
John, Jason Witten may turn out to be a very good broadcaster at some point. He is certainly not there right now, and he had a number of gaffes again last night. And I think the most noticeable thing for me is when he's on camera, you can tell he's nervous.
It's funny you say that because I was thinking that during their open last night.
Yes, I watched the exact same open, and I'm watching. Man, he looks like a guy who's really nervous, and he shows it with his tics, the way he talks, everything else. He can get better. There's no doubt about that. But if you're ESPN, you've clearly made a mistake from the beginning. You hired a guy who had no experience, and he doesn't look ready for the job. How do you handle things now moving forward? Does he need more work? Does he need less work? Do you admit that it's a mistake after year one and go in a different direction? How do you think they should handle this if you're ESPN?
Well, first of all, let's go back for a second to why Jason Witten is there. It's because of Tony Romo. Because CBS, you know, yanked Romo off the field and made him the number one guy right from the get-go, and he was successful last year. I don't think he's as good as people say he is, but he was good, and he was an upgrade on Phil Simms, who had sort of lost a lot of his enthusiasm in the booth for whatever reason. So ESPN, it's a copycat industry, looks at Romo, looks at CBS, and says, aha, Jason Witten is a bright, articulate guy, which he is. He's nearing the end of his career. We'll throw a lot of money at him to get him to retire and be our number one guy because Gruden left to go back to coaching the Raiders. And we need somebody and we want to make a splash. Now, I don't think hiring Jason Witten is that big a splash, but they were hoping that Jason Witten would be the next coming of Tony Romo. And as you said, Chad, clearly he's not. Here's the thing I can tell you about ESPN from firsthand experience. They very rarely admit a mistake. That's just not who they are in Bristol. So my guess is that at the end of the season, they will put him, you know, into a cave somewhere and try to coach him up before next season starts. Now, if things really go south, if he continues to make really bad mistakes, they may not have a choice. They may have to say, okay, you're going to go be our number two college guy. Or we're going to, you know, because it's not like they're CBS or Fox where you have four or five broadcast teams. They have one for the NFL. And so they would have to move him if they moved him to somewhere, in, you know, in their millions of college teams that they have. I think he'll get at least one more year unless things really, really, really get bad and they just have no choice. Found all sorts of coaches who told me stories about how Sonny had guided Alonzo Mourning to Georgetown, Brian Williams to Maryland, and on. Brian Williams became Bison Dealey and died at sea. You might remember that story. But the problem was nobody'd go on the record. They'd tell me the story and say that, you know, but I can't be quoted. And I was having breakfast one morning with Joey Meyer. This was in Vegas during a summer camp, who was then the coach at DePaul. And I said, Joey, why can't I get anybody to go on the record with this story? And his answer was, John, there are two kinds of basketball coaches right now. Those who have Nike contracts and those who want Nike contracts. That's how dominant Nike was at the time. Adidas, Reebok, and then Under Armour, Reebok of course merged with Adidas eventually, came onto the scene and became a part of this recruiting, story. And there's no question that the guys who worked there, part of their job was to make sure that the coaches who were being paid to promote their product had good teams. And the methods they used varied. It could be as simple as getting kids concert tickets. I mean, I wrote a book called Foul Trouble that was fiction, but it was really faction. And it was about recruiting. And it was about guys, a lot of it was about guys like this and the way they used their influence to guide players to schools. And you remember, as far back as 1982, Digger Phelps talked about this when he was at Notre Dame and said, the toughest thing is you can't prove cash. Now, you can prove cash when guys are under oath, when they've been caught. You know, texting didn't exist back then. The text between Bill Self and the Adidas guy are clearly very damning. But having said that, if anybody thinks that Bill Self or Rick Pitino or Sean Miller or any of their assistants were the only ones or are the only ones who have been involved with shoe companies this way, I go back to my original line about selling you Oceanfront in Oklahoma. This is a massive problem, and it really, I find it depressing that guys like Jim Boeheim and Mike Krzyzewski and Roy Williams, all of whom I know well, all of whom I respect, go around going, oh, but the shoe companies have been so good for college basketball. You know, that's a little bit like saying, you know, that Mussolini built nice roads in Italy.
Brian Bowen's at the center of a lot of this, the player who ended up going to Louisville. And just to illustrate how deep this goes, this is something that jumped out to me. Colleges that he accused of offering tens of thousands of dollars for his service. Arizona, okay, no surprise. Oklahoma State, no big surprise. Texas, no big surprise. Creighton offered tens of thousands of dollars for this guy to play. If Creighton is offering that kind of cash for college basketball players, how deep does it run? That was a name that jumped out to me that doesn't exactly go to the top of the list of big-time college basketball programs you would think are paying big money for players, and there's one right there.
Yeah, and I mean, Creighton's had some very good teams in recent years, to be fair. But your point is well taken, Chad, that, again, as I said, to think that this is limited to a handful of schools is just naive. And I know of one situation, and again, nobody's gone on the record here, so I can't be more specific, but one situation where a coach who was being interviewed for a big-time job and was told by the athletic director that the shoe company that they were in business with would make sure he got players. And this particular coach didn't want to go in that direction, and so he turned down the opportunity. I'm not sure he would have gotten a job, but he turned down the interview, the opportunity to interview further for the job. And that's the way the business works and has worked for years and years and years. And we're talking about it now only because there's a trial going on in a courtroom where it's now a matter of public record. Now people are being forced to go on the record, whereas in the 1980s, when I was looking into this, I couldn't get anybody to go on the record.
John Feinstein has been our guest. Another great visit with him. John, thank you so much, and we will catch up next week.
All right. Safe travels, guys. Enjoy yourselves in London. I'm sure you'll have fun, and I hope the Titans offense makes the trip.
So do we.
Same here. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. John Feinstein with us normally each Monday. Right here on the Midday 180.